that since the appointment of a special representative to fight sexual violence and child enrollment in armed groups, the rate of sexual violence has been reduced by half. The UN Refugee Agency in South Sudan has requested additional funds to cover the new needs of people displaced as a result of the violence in the country. The supplementary appeal for just more than $781 million was launched on Friday. The revised requirements are higher than the earlier budget of $483.9 million. Over 3 million people are estimated to benefit from the agency's interventions. Meanwhile, some 6.1 million South Sudanese are estimated to be in urgent need of humanitarian assistance. And finally, a dispute is raging about whether more people attended Donald Trump's inauguration as U.S. president on Friday or the Women's March against Trump on Saturday, both in the capital, Washington. The inauguration drew several hundreds of thousands of people with varying estimates of the exact figure. Trump has accused the media of lying and deliberately making the numbers seem smaller. Estimates of attendance at the Women's March also vary. Sharon Bryce Peace reports.
Some say 500,000, others close to 1 million. But what is clear is that hundreds of thousands turned up just in Washington to protest a president they believe does not represent their values.
I think it goes to show that Donald Trump may have won the Electoral College, but he did not win the American people.
Concluding a day of action, the hundreds of thousands of protesters in Washington converged on the South Lawn of the White House to send a very clear and direct message to the newest resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue that while he might be the 45th president of the United States, his principles and policies do not represent all of America.
That's the news headlines at 8:30 Central African Time.
Thank you. And Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan arrived in Tanzania on Sunday for a two-day official visit where he is expected to meet with his counterpart John Magufuli and other local officials. Erdogan was welcomed at the Julius Nyerere International Airport by Tanzanian Prime Minister Kassim Majaliwa and Yasemin Eralp, Turkish ambassador to Tanzania. Gabriel Zakaria has more from Dar es Salaam.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs and East Africa, Dr. Augustine Mahiga, says the aim of the visit is to cement the bilateral relationship between Turkey and Tanzania and expand the investment opportunities on business and investment sectors. Bernard Achiula is a senior diplomatic analyst and a professor at the College of Diplomacy in Dar es Salaam. He says the visit of Turkish president is more beneficial to Tanzanians.
Turkey is a bridge between Europe and Asia and Africa. He is a kind of a bridge between us. So I think it's a very good idea that we work with someone who can transmit our needs and our efforts to Europe, Asia, and Africa. You know, the situation of Turkey, if you see it, where it is a bridge. And all countries, if you want to work with Europe to Asia, you have to use Turkey, because he is a kind of a bridge between all these continents. So it is a good thing that we work with him, and the Tanzania will profit a lot from Turkey.
During the first day of the visit, President Erdogan will hold private talks with President Magufuli before a meeting that would involve associates from both sides. According to the minister, the two presidents will later hold the witness the signing of the bilateral agreement on various development areas. Tanzania and Turkey have been good friends for a long time. Later today, the two presidents will officiate a business forum that will bring together business people from both Turkey and Tanzania. The resetting of Turkey's embassy in Tanzania in 2009 has since strengthened the relations, whereby former president of Turkey, Abdullah Gül, visited Tanzania in 2010 and former President of Tanzania, Mr. Jakaya Kikwete, also visited Turkey, and the President of Zanzibar, Ali Mohamed Shein, also visited Turkey in 2011. The government of Tanzania for quite a long time had no embassy in Turkey, but recently the authority has announced to open an embassy in Turkey as President Magufuli swore in the elected ambassador Professor Elizabeth Kiondo, who will represent the country of Tanzania in Turkey. Tanzania and Turkey also had a long-standing relationship through the Commission of Business that was initiated in 2011 after signing an agreement on business relationship between the two countries.
What I think is that, you know, if you take Turkey as a country, as I've told you, you know, most of the Turkish people, they live in America. I know in Germany there are 6 million Turkish people and in other countries of Europe. So what they've done, in all these years, they've taken the technology of Europe and they bring it to Turkey. And now, we Tanzanians, we will take the technology from them. So, and what they did, the Turkish state, they tried to accommodate the technology of European in their way. So I think we will have a big chance, if we work with them, to accommodate the technology in our own way. And I know, you know, Turkey is a country which has a lot of experience in their history, and they think that they belong to us more than Europe.
The trade relationship has since led to many benefits and development between the two countries, including the strengthening of relationship in aviation sector, with Turkish Airlines launching direct flights from Istanbul to Dar es Salaam, Kilimanjaro and Zanzibar. The launch of the flights has seen growth of trade between Turkey and Tanzania, leading to growth of $66 million to February 2016. The inaugural of the Turkey and Tanzania Business Commission in 2013 that helped in enhancing private sectors in the two countries has also enabled over 30 Turkish business companies set an investment of $305.08 million, creating some 2,959 jobs. Reporting for Channel Africa in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, this is Gabriel Zakaria.
Tourism stakeholders on the Kenyan coast expressed their concerns over travel advisory issued by the American government earlier this month, warning its citizens from visiting several parts of northeastern Kenya and the coastal region. The advisory has also come at a time when political mood for the August 8th general election is high, with politicians gearing up for campaigns. Diana Wanyonyi reports from Mombasa.
The travel advisory dated January 13, 2017, relating to Kenya, replaces the one issued on the 30th of June 2016, in which the U.S. Department of State warns its citizens to avoid travel to the border areas between Somalia and Kenya because of the threats by the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. The new advisory states, and I quote, "Avoid travel in the northeastern Kenyan counties of Mandera, Wajir and Garissa, the coastal counties of Tana River and Lamu in their entirely areas, all areas of north of Malindi in Kilifi County, and the Nairobi neighborhood of Eastleigh. In Mombasa, the U.S. Embassy recommends U.S. citizens visit Old Town only during daylight hours and avoid using the Likoni ferry due to security concerns," end of the quote. Visits to the Old Town area, where the famous historical Fort Jesus built by Portuguese in the 15th century stands tall, annually attracts more than 2,000 international and more than 100,000 domestic tourists. But that has started to slow down. Karissa Juma is one of the Fort Jesus tour guides, who I found waiting outside the attraction for foreign visitors to show them around. He elaborates on the impact of the travel warning issued by the United States.
There are no advisory, so it was a bit okay. But now we have another one, so it will affect us. During election, we don't receive a lot of tourists. We have to do something like marketing to show that this place is safe, security is okay. The government should take a responsibility of that. Up to date, you can take maybe 2, 3, 4 tourists. By this time, it's only once, because we are many tour guides here.
Millicent Odhiambo, Chief Executive Officer of the Kenya Coast Tourism Association, has dismissed the advisory, saying that Kenya is safe.
There has been no sign or any reason for insecurity within the region at all. In fact, in the last 2 years, we have enjoyed a very, very peaceful and secure environment. People have always been nabbed, which to us means that our boundaries are secured and our intelligence and security personnel are working around the clock. For the American Embassy giving that advisory to us is not in good taste, and we have been left wondering whether it is a repercussion or they want to hit back at us for anything as Kenya, because when you want to hit at a country, you hit at where it hurts most. And tourism is an economic pillar in this country.
Odhiambo urged the U.S. government to lift the travel warning.
Whatever it is that has triggered them to give the advisories, we want to kindly ask them to reverse. We are going to lobby through the government and through our national associations, the umbrella body KTF, lobby with the consulates to get them to reverse what they are saying.
Sammy Ikwae, chairperson of the Kenya Association of Hotel Keepers and Caterers Coast Branch, is optimistic that other countries will not also issue travel advisories, saying that it has led to loss of jobs, thus affecting the economy of the Kenyan coast and the country at large.
What happened to Kenya when we had advisories last time? We had serious job losses. The entire economy of the coastal communities were really affected. Most people lost jobs. Most children are not able to go to school, and it's very worse that it's coming at this time when you're faced with a general election. But we're really hoping that the other nations are not going to follow suit, and urge really Kenyans to be able to put our house in order, and particularly coastal counties, as we move towards the election.
On Thursday, the American-based luxury cruise ship MV Nautica docked at the Mombasa port from Zanzibar, carrying 654 foreign tourists, among them 282 passengers from the U.S. who were scheduled to visit several parts of the coastal region. Reporting for Channel Africa, I am Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa.
Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Kulitonjoy Addis Ababa.
Africa, rise and shine.
I am Hilda Kekeloa in Zambia.
This is Simon Muchemwa in Harare, Zimbabwe.
Jean-Noel Bamwisi, Channel Africa, Kinshasa.
From an African perspective, listen to Channel Africa in English, Kiswahili, French, Silozi, Portuguese, and Chinyanja.
This is Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé,
informing the world about Africa.
Ntakwana ngatani in Mohalizuk, Lesotho.
And I am Diana Wanyonyi for Channel Africa in Mombasa.
Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
The people of South Sudan have expressed mixed expressions on the coming into office of a new United States President Donald Trump. Our East Africa correspondent James Shimanyula spotlights or highlights their expressions, which come at a time when the ongoing ethnic fighting is tearing Africa's newest nation apart.
The United States has remained one of the international friends of South Sudan, Africa's newest nation. In fact, it was the United States that took the lead, among other countries, to push for the attainment of independence of South Sudan. Since 2011, when South Sudan separated officially from the North to be an independent nation, the United States has contributed millions of dollars to South Sudan to help the country put modern infrastructure in place. The Barack Obama administration has also taken the lead in ensuring that peace prevails in South Sudan. It is for these reasons that the people of South Sudan have raised their voices to comment on the coming into office of America's new President Donald Trump. Here is a sampling of their voices.
I would like Donald J. Trump and his new administration to acquaint themselves and dig deep into the root causes of South Sudan crisis. And thereafter, he and his new government should work for honest and durable solution to South Sudan conflict.
I would like Donald J. Trump, together with international community, to work towards bringing amicable solution to the South Sudan civil war and create room for peace to the suffering population. This peace should be inclusive, genuine and address the root causes of the conflict, and moreover, bring to book or accountability to those who have committed genocide and crime against humanity.
I would like to ask the President Donald to bring peace to the South Sudanese people by engaging them into common understanding.
What I need is peace. If there is a way for Donald J. Trump to bring peace in South Sudan, I would be very much happy.
I'm really hoping that he would help us strengthen our economy, because here in South Sudan, our standard of living, it's not everyone that can afford. So I'm really hoping if he can do that.
What I want from Donald is just to bring peace to our leaders, to talk to our leaders. We are now running out of everything from our country. We just need his help to bring peace in our country.
I wish Donald Trump to actually help South Sudan in political crisis and economic crisis.
We need him to strongly fight for peaceful South Sudan.
What I need from Donald Trump is to work hand in hand with our President Salva Kiir Mayardit to stabilize the deteriorating economy of South Sudan so that people cannot die of hunger anymore, and to also help strengthen peaceful coexistence among South Sudanese.
We need him to give us peace, because here in South Sudan we don't have peace. And also we need education.
For me, what I want for President Kayali Paz is health, because we are lacking of doctors in our country. People are suffering from many diseases and we don't have treatment. So that is what I want.
I want him to help us with the infrastructure, because this would help us get things easily here, and for transportation and everything else.
I would like Donald J. Trump to bring peace to South Sudan, to work hard to make sure that there is peace in South Sudan so that we have prosperity and development and stability in our country.
We really want Donald Trump to discourage and completely abstain himself from supporting rebels within any democratic government.
As a South Sudanese, I need President of USA, Donald Trump, to work very hard to support South Sudan for peace. We just need to be in peace. As South Sudan, being at a wartime for all this time, we need to have a peace in our country.
The U.S. President, we ask him to be humble enough to look into the issue of South Sudan. South Sudan has been in instability for so long, and people are tired. People have suffered enough. Very many lives have been lost, and the suffering is still continuing. We ask the President of USA, Donald Trump, look into the issue of South Sudan to ensure that lasting peace comes into the country. We don't mind of whichever means he's going to use, but we need peace in the country. People have suffered enough. It's time for people to develop the country, to enjoy also, just like any other citizens of other countries in the world.
We believe and we hope that if Donald Trump is going to work very hard in order to bring peace to the people of Africa, to the people of the world, in particular for the people of South Sudan. People of South Sudan has been suffering for almost now 4 years.
Let me hope Trump will bring improvement to South Sudanese citizens, especially concerning the issue of peace. We need peace in our country. South Sudan, that's the major issue, because currently citizens in South Sudan, they are really suffering. People are dying. Many things are happening, and we need him to bring something good in our country, South Sudan.
Inauguration of Trump, for me personally, it doesn't mean a lot, because we know that the USA as a country has a set policy that each and every person has to follow. So it's a system. We don't expect much change. But for us as South Sudanese, what we really expect is that he should pay attention to South Sudan crisis and at least try to work hard and bring peace in South Sudan. We have seen things scattered all over. We don't know where to begin from and where to end.
Those were varying comments of the people of South Sudan on the entry into office of United States 45th President Donald Trump. Reporting for Channel Africa, this is James Shimanyula.
It's 8:23 Central African time, and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. We're coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa on the frequencies 7230 kilohertz on the 41-meter band to Southern Africa, and on 15255 kilohertz on the 19-meter band to Far West Africa, as well as DSTV's audio bouquet channel 802. A scholarship program administered by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is restoring hope among young people displaced by the conflict in South Sudan. The DAFI scholarship program, which the German government has funded for the past 25 years, has allowed more than 2,000 refugees in 41 countries to continue their post-secondary education. DAFI is the German acronym for Albert Einstein German Academic Refugee Initiative Fund. UN Radio's Sebit William has been speaking to UNHCR External Relations Officer in South Sudan, Richard Ruwati, and scholarship recipient Kolax Abraham, who is pursuing a degree in the capital, Juba. Ruwati began by explaining why DAFI scholarships benefit students and their countries.
It is a kind of a scholarship launched in 1992, to restore educational hope among refugees, because you know refugees are ordinary people like us. So when they flee their countries, they lose a lot of opportunities, including education. And also sometimes when they return back to their country, they cannot get the necessary jobs they can get. So upon returning to their country, we need to make sure that refugees, they go back with the necessary skills that they can benefit from.
Let's talk to Kolax, who is one of the beneficiaries, of course, of this scholarship scheme. Kolax, tell us about your experience.
Yeah, my name is Kolax Abraham. I'm a refugee in Yei River State. I'm in St. Mary's College, Juba, South Sudan. I'm doing education department.
How many are you who are benefiting from this particular program?
Now we are 14 in number. We are 11 gentlemen and 3 ladies from DRC and Sudan.
How has this program changed you?
Since when we were in the refugee camp, we were really suffering a lot. But when we obtain this kind of scholarship, it really has changed us. Since we obtained it, we joined St. Mary's College. We really got different people. We are now interacting with them. And this scholarship is really vital to us. It's changing our moods.
Richard, why is the UNHCR work in the field of education so important, particularly at the moment?
You know, refugees are people like anybody else. They have a lot of potential. The people who are fleeing are not only older people, they're also young people. You know, for example, South Sudan is a country which is home to people who are former refugees, who lived in Kakuma refugee camp in DRC, in Central Africa Republic. It is through this kind of intervention of education of UNHCR that these people were able to acquire education. And when they return to South Sudan, they are able to work in offices. Even myself, who is speaking to you, I was once a refugee student in Central Africa Republic. And even the person who is managing the scholarship at the UNHCR level was once a student, and he was responsible by the same scholarship, who is managing it now at the South Sudan side. It is restoring hope among the refugees, because without education, the root causes or even some of the issues that the refugees are fleeing for, they will not understand. And when they understand these kind of things through acquiring knowledge and they return to their countries, they really become so useful and resourceful.
Colleagues, share your dreams with us after this scholarship.
Okay, normally dreams becomes reality.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I promise that after I get finished, I would like to help my people in all the communities, especially in that side also of refugee camp, voluntary to transform their lives, since some of them, they really fled from their homes due to war. But I promise that after here, I'm going to work with the vulnerable, disabilities, and to encourage the girl child education. And we have the young children that they fail to access education, but through the establishment of this organization like DAFI, UNHCR, they have accessed the education, and I'm sure that I'm willing that to work with them hand in hand for us not to suffer more.
If you had not gotten this kind of scholarship, do you think you could be in the university now? I mean, how was life with you at the refugee camp?
Without this scholarship offered to us, it was a bit difficult for us to get access to higher level of education, because we understand that the requirements needed for the high level is a bit terrible for us in the refugee camp, and for us, we were not having any source of getting money.
What message could you like to send out there to the people, especially those who are yet to finish their secondary school certificate?
I would like also to tell education is easy to be obtained and it's difficult to be obtained. He said it is easy when you have the interest on education and you can manage to assess it, and it is going to be difficult when you ignore education. I would like also to tell my colleagues outside there, it is through their work hardship they can obtain such a scholarship, and this is not time for sleeping or doing other things. Let us have commitment in doing other things like education to raise or to transform our lives.
That was UNHCR External Relations Officer in South Sudan, Richard Ruwati, and scholarship recipient Colex Abraham speaking there to Sibit William. It's 8:30 Central African time, and our headlines up next with Anne Musa.
A very good morning to you. In the headlines, former Gambian leader Yahya Jammeh has reportedly stolen more than $11.4 million in his final weeks in power. The United Nations Committee on the Rights of the Child has expressed grave concern over the situation of children in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the UN Refugee Agency in South Sudan has requested additional funds to cover the new needs of people displaced as a result of the violence in the country. Those are the stories making headlines.
Channel Africa, South Africa's only official international public radio station on shortwave in